It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, November 10th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that are not politically correct and those you might not hear about on other programs. My website is spingola.com. There you will find information about my three books, The Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book two and three. Please also visit the website of a friend and a listener who has created and maintains the website, SpingolaSpeaks.wordpress.com. All of the more recent audio files of my programs are at that site, including the RBN files, the American Free Press files, and, the files of this program. My Twitter account is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. If you have questions or comments, feel free to call into the program at 646-787-1915. We will also be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. Please remember, I do not access my regular email during the program, and many of you know that I did have some computer issues last week, which I finally got resolved, and I'm still catching up on the emails and whatnot, so be patient with me. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. She is the author of Murder by Medicine is No Accident, The Lethal Dose, Why Your Doctor is Prescribing It. It is a fabulous book. It's just terrific. You need to read it. I mean, there's some really amazing things in that book. You just don't know what you're doing or you're taking your life in your hands when you go to your doctor. And my gosh, I'm so happy that I have found Dr. Daniels. She's also the co-author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com. Welcome to the program, Dr. Daniels.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And your book is great. Honestly, when you read it, you think, you mean all this stuff is poison? And by darn it is. It is poison. There is a lethal dose, like warfarin. It's rat poison, otherwise known as Coumadin. And, yeah, you can take a little bit of it, but if you take a little bit too much, you're going to bleed to death like the rats.
Well, now, wait a minute. If you take it as directed, you'll still bleed to death. Half of folks who take warfarin die from the warfarin.
Yes, that's right.
So they still bleed to death and die at the therapeutic dose.
Oh,
so let's not pretend that the dose the doctors are prescribing of Coumadin is not lethal. It is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is in your book. And when you think about that and just screening, people should not get screened for diseases because they are going to find something. It doesn't matter how you're feeling. If you're feeling great, you go in for a screening. They're going to find something wrong with you because that is what they're trying to do. Right?
Well, now, they find what's not there. That's another thing. It's not like they're finding something that's really there and wrong. The tests give what's called a false positive. Every test is designed. They're designed to give false positives, and that's what the public is not aware of. They could design the test so the false positive rate was zero, but they don't do that. They design the test to create false positives, preferably 5% false positives, just by the way. And this is a design. It's designed into the test.
Yikes. Holy cow. All right, let's tell the listeners about your RBN program. You have a program on RBN from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time.
On Sundays?
Yes, Sundays. Go ahead.
Well, I have a program called Healing with Dr. Daniels. It's on RBN. And I cover information that helps people understand how the healthcare system is murdering people predictably and systematically. And each issue, I give instructions and directions on how to avoid murder by medicine.
Exactly. And if people visit your website, and if they've missed your program, just visit the website, vitalitycapsules.com. Go up to the top. It says Radio Replay. Just click that link, and you can listen to all those programs that you may have missed. And I really urge people to listen to all of them because they're all kind of interconnected. You learn something from every single program. She covers so many things, things that you may not even be aware that you need to listen to, but you need to listen to all these programs. Okay.
It's amazing when you find out what you don't know or what you thought you knew just isn't so.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness.
I'd like to say that's a crisis we all go through. And for me, every single program I do, basically I reveal an area where I personally was deceived. I mean, as a medical student, as a practicing doctor, I really believed that that was true. And I found out by seeing how poorly my patients did that there had to be more. It just wasn't true. And I dug deeper and found the truth. So many people say, oh, Dr. Daniels is so brilliant and she knows all the answers. Not exactly. I was deceived just like many of my listeners were at one point. But through shocking, traumatic, personal, firsthand experience, I saw that it just wasn't so.
Right. And I think we probably all have family members who are being deceived by allopathic medicine. And sometimes you can help them and sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can say, hey, wait, before you take that chemo or before you do the radiation or before you do this or that, please listen. But the brainwashing is so pervasive.
It's everywhere. And the problem is it's such a cooperation. The same people who are murdering you with healthcare also control the educational system. They are now teaching children from kindergarten about the importance of prenatal care, about the importance of vaccines, about the importance of screening and preventative care, to thoroughly, thoroughly brainwash them. By the time they're 18, they'll know that it's true. It's got to be true. Why would mom get me dressed up every day and send me to school to learn this stuff if it wasn't true?
Sure. Wow. All right. And even some of your children.
Oh, yeah.
And it's I think that mothers sometimes have the most difficult time talking with their children because, well, what could mom know?
Well, I think it's because I sent them to school. Before I sent them to school, when I sent them at age 13, they were pretty reasonable people. But, I mean, obviously it coincided with adolescence. But sending them to school was definitely not a good move, to government school. But I sent them to private school, too, a combination, but they were equally erroneous in terms of the data set, the information set. But I think, really, it is standard education. They went to college, which is not a good idea. The two oldest did graduate, and the oldest one, I think, is recovered now. The middle one is still recovering from his college misinformation. The youngest one, thank God, at the end of 2 years, decided, you know what, I've had enough. I'm getting a job. If my employer wants me to have a bachelor's degree, they can pay for it. And I think that's a reasonable posture.
Right. Well, it is really something that we all need to learn, that we live in a society that is censored. we often hear about how other societies, well we heard about Russia, the Soviets, oh, they were all brainwashed and you can't, you know, they just were terrible to their populace. And then we think, my gosh, I mean, we are probably the most brainwashed country in the world. I know that we are the sickest, and yet we spend more for health care in this country than any other country in the world, and yet we are the sickest, and we probably visit the doctor more frequently.
Absolutely. And the happiness rating in the United States is pretty darn low. And so you have to ask yourself, are we really that bright if we're spending so much money and getting so little health and so little happiness in return?
Right. Absolutely. And and people do run to the doctor. We've all been kind of trained to run to the doctor. And it didn't used to be like that. People used to know how to take care of themselves at home.
Well, not even that. Now we're being legally penalized for not running to the doctor. You know, if a parent doesn't get their kid immunized, if a parent doesn't take their kid to the doctor for every little thing, there's child protective. If you don't take your appearance to the doctor, there's elderly protective services. If you don't go to the doctor, let's say you have a work-related accident and you don't go to the doctor, or let's say you heal it naturally, then you don't get any disability benefits or workers' compensation because you don't have a doctor's medical record documenting that, one, he recommended therapy, and two, that you took it. I had a patient who had a workers' compensation injury, came to see me. I recommended something natural. She got better. The disability council decided she must have never been sick because she got better without drugs.
Oh, my
gosh. So the penalties for using your common sense and saying, you know what, this stuff is dangerous and poisonous, I'm not doing it, the penalties are harsh. There's a lot of pressure.
Wow. And even when you do have an accident, and I've heard you talk about this, if you break your leg or something, it doesn't mean that you have to run to the emergency room.
Correct. They're going to do an x-ray and then tell you to sit tight at home until the weekend has passed and the orthopedic surgeon has thoroughly enjoyed his weekend. And then Monday, he's going to miraculously handle what was an emergency on Friday. Well, utter nonsense. If he can wait till Monday, so can you.
How true. Oh, my goodness. And meanwhile, they might keep you in the hospital and try and do chest x-rays and all kinds of other things just because.
Not only that, but you get to catch a hospital-acquired infection and you have a non-fatal fracture or you catch a deadly illness and there you go.
Right. And the number of people that die in the hospital is amazing.
Shocking.
Yeah.
I calculate the death rate per hospital day is 0.25%. So 0.25% doesn't sound like much, so you multiply it by 365. So if you stay in the hospital for a full year, you literally have over an 80% chance of being dead. Actually, 90% chance of being dead at the end of 365 days in the hospital. There's no place else you can be in the United States for 1 year and have a 90% chance of dying.
Wow. And as you've said, there's no yellow tape, no criminal tape around the hospital.
No.
Nobody gets arrested.
No investigation.
Nobody gets questioned.
Nope.
And because, of course, the same people who run the medical schools also have all of this advertising on television, so you're
No, the people who run the medical schools, everyone you're looking at is powerless. Whether it's the doctor, the professor, they're all under orders. But the people who control the media, the judicial system, and the police also control the hospital in committing the murders.
Wow.
So there is no opportunity for redress. The only opportunity is avoidance, and that's why, you know, I try to educate people, because there is no relief in the legal system. There is no relief in the penal system. There is no relief in the police system. The police are not there to protect you from the mass murderers. That's not their job. They work for them.
Right. Wow.
Well, I mean, that's okay. We don't need to get all down in the mouth over it. Once you know that, you can just avoid the hazard, you know. Like, I don't have health insurance, for example. I don't have health insurance, and whatever my problem is, I know the hospital is not a solution. In fact, there are people who are so brainwashed that they actually try to locate their house close to a hospital in case they need something. I mean, can you imagine locating yourself close to a mass murderer in case you need to get murdered? It's just as sensible.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's a lot of freedom. I can live where I want. I don't have to worry about a hospital being nearby. I don't have to worry about health insurance. It's one less card in my pocket. No forms to fill out. No deadline to check. It's great.
Right. And some people, even when they're looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
they will take a job based on the fact, based on whether or not it comes with health insurance, whether the job has that benefit.
Right.
And they will accept the job that has the health insurance attached.
Correct. Now, those jobs, just by the way, tend to pay a lot less.
Ah.
Yes. I mean, as an employer, when I had a person at the front desk, she says, I want health insurance. I said, well, you know, health insurance costs money, and I can either give you cash or I can pay your health insurance. This is way back in the 90s, where $350 a month went a pretty long way.
Mm-hmm.
And she would rather have the $350 a month as health insurance than as cash in her pocket.
Sure. Sure.
And that's what's happening today. Only today, they hit you double. The employer has this mythical contribution he's making, but then your contribution is as high sometimes as $4,000 a month. I'm talking to people who have premiums that are just that high.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, whereas you can get a 1099 job. That means you're a consultant or whatever. No health insurance, no retirement benefits, nothing. And same work, and you're going to make easily 20 to 30% more in cash. And what can you do with that?
Well, anything you want.
Not so much that, but in terms of your health, let's just say that's what you want. It's cheaper just to, buy clean food. Or heck, at $4,000 a month, you can hire a gardener to grow stuff in your own backyard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the basis for health.
Correct. There is no other basis for health. Clean food, clean water, and happiness. That's, clean food, clean water, and no one's poisoning you or shooting you with needles and guns and scalpels and damaging you.
Right. And, of course, most of us, the greater majority of the population, have already been poisoned, shot, inoculated, vaccinated. We've had things removed, have had things put in, all kinds of things. And so how do we get from where we are to that point where we can clean up our immune system? I know that's not...
Well, we can just stop. Just leave the system alone. Just say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is first, cease and desist.
Okay.
Cease and desist. That next appointment, maybe you don't need to make it. Or if you are, at least don't accept any more drugs for anything. I have people who call me and sign up for my Spontaneous Healing Inner Circle program because they're through. They're through. And the doctor has found two more things wrong with me. He says I need drugs. I don't want drugs. Here I am. Help me.
Wow.
Get me off the drugs I'm already on and handle the other stuff that's come up so I don't need any more drugs.
Wow.
So that's what you got to do. You've got to make up your mind, no more drugs. So whatever new problems you have, drugs are not the answer.
Right.
And if you will just make up your mind, that's the first step. The next step is to start getting off the drugs that you're already on. And your doctor will tell you, and there are even some naturalists who agree with this, oh, just cut that, just stop the drugs. And that's not true. You can't just stop the drugs. You've got to make lifestyle changes so that you can stop the drugs. If your food is low nutritional value, you've got to address your malnutrition. If you're constipated, you've got to have more balance.
Vitality capsules.
Yep. Dr. Daniel's vitality capsules. That's why I invented them, because I realized that I could not get people better unless they started having bowel movements, and I didn't have a reliable, agreeable way to assist people, and so I created the vitality capsules.
Right. And they're wonderful. In fact, I accidentally dropped one on the floor the other day, and my cat, Leo, my youngest cat, grabbed it, and he ate it. It didn't affect him, I don't think. I mean, but it's not poison. Now, if I had dropped something, some prescription on the floor, it could have killed him if he'd eaten it.
Exactly. The vitality capsules are simply roots and seeds and flowers, just all natural. There are no excipients or binders or anything, no magnesium stearate, no silica, nothing. It's just natural herbs put in a capsule.
Exactly. And that's one of the, I do a lot of reading, and that's one of the things that we do need to have done is we need to be able to go to the bathroom regularly, at least 3 times a day. Because that's one of the ways that we get the toxins out, and we need to be able to perspire, and we need to do all the things that that people used to do 100 years ago. And I will say that I have been off my, I used to take Synthroid, had been on it for probably 10, 12 years. I am drug-free.
Yep.
So, and I feel good. I feel great. I'm not, you know, I don't feel like a 20-year-old or anything, but I feel really good.
Yeah. And doctors are told, and they tell their patients that once you're on Synthroid, that's it. You're done. There's no going back. And that's just not true.
I can verify that. I can verify that. Yep. It was scary because
it went against everything you were told.
Sure.
Right. And in my awakening, I mean, I had to do things. I'm like, this is it. I know I'm going to die, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to either die or find out something.
Like when you took the first dose of turpentine, right?
Oh, yeah, that was it. I had my will on top of the refrigerator there, wherever we could find it. Had the receptionist, my receptionist had instructions that if I didn't show up for work, just cancel the patients, don't worry about it. I wasn't going to tell her what I was doing.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I was taught in medical school that being a vegetarian was deadly, and one day I decided that's it. I'm going to be a vegetarian, and maybe I'll die, but that's, I'm willing to take that chance. And I became a vegetarian, and it just felt awesome. It felt great. I was pregnant with my third child. The doctors had totally brutalized me and mutilated me when I had my second child. And I made up my mind, it was going to be me and God. If God wanted to kill me, he'd have to strike me dead all by himself without the hand of any human.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed home and had my baby in the living room floor in about 2.5 hours with no complications.
Wow.
But every single thing that you have to do to save yourself, it's going to be something that you've been told is deadly, something you've been told you should never, never do.
Right. And there's so much information out there, and it's very difficult. Now, you brought up the vegetarian diet. There are other people that swear you have to have meat, you have to have protein, you have to have this, you have to have that. And then there's a group of people, get off the grains, get off the gluten, get off... To the point,
every single diet that you've heard about is appropriate for some people at some point, and
mm-hmm.
that's the issue. There is no diet, even vegetarian diet, that's good for all people at all times.
Okay.
And that's the answer for that. And you will get people who will argue the paleo diet is the best diet. No, 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 it's the Atkins diet. No, 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 it's the self-beef diet. No, it's the vegetarian, it's the vegan, it's the raw. Each one of these diets has its place. And that's where the skill is required in determining which diet is appropriate for which person at which time.
Mm-hmm. Now, would that be along the line of, what was this guy's name, Peter D'Amio or something like that?
Eat right for your blood type?
Yeah.
No, that's another marketing thing. And the marketing thing is... if you're blood type A, you have to buy his 4 bottles of blood type A supplements to go with your blood type A diet and so on. So, no, that's another marketing shtick. Some people do need a raw food diet to heal. Some people do need a vegan diet to heal. And some people do need a diet with meat to heal. Everyone's different.
Okay. Right. I also read Liara Keith's book, and she was vegan for a very, very long time. And she was so sick. I mean, her menstrual period stopped. She was just really,
right.
really sick.
Right.
So.
Now, what her takeaway message might have been, being vegan is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was that her takeaway message?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Again, wrong message. Because the reason she went vegan was she felt better being vegan, maybe for the first 5 years or even the first 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real takeaway message, is for her, that diet was appropriate for 5 years. Or 10 years. The bad thing was she continued it beyond that.
Ah, okay.
And it's like It's like your mother gives birth to you and she raises you as a child, right? And you and the first 18 years, that's pretty good. But for you to stay home and continue being a good child for another 30 years is inappropriate. Does that mean she never should have raised you? Does that mean she never should have cared for you the first 10 or 15 years of your life? No. It just means at a certain point, that relationship is no longer appropriate for you to be dependent like that, and you need to go into the next phase of your life. It's the same with a vegetarian diet. For a particular length of time, usually anywhere from 2 months to 20 years at the most, it might be appropriate. But beyond that, then you enter into the harm.
Now, when Dr. Lorraine Day had breast cancer, she went on a vegetarian diet, mm-hmm. and it helped her to get rid of her breast cancer.
Right.
Okay.
So what caused her breast cancer was a diet excessive in meat and dairy.
Ah, okay. Uh-huh. Right, and which tends to, the paleo diet talks a lot about dairy. I get raw milk from an Amish farmer and grass-fed beef and free-range chicken eggs and all that kind of stuff. But maybe it's, and I don't use grains, and yet... You are a vegetarian.
No, I was vegetarian. I hit the same wall that the author hit that you were talking about.
Okay.
So my position is that being vegetarian, for me, it was great. It was awesome for 10 years.
Okay.
But I continued it just like she did for 27 years. I nearly died. One day I woke up and I couldn't get out of bed. I said, wait a minute, if diets can heal, why am I not healthy?
Right, okay.
So I had to conclude that my diet was the problem. So I added meat, and now I'm much, much better.
Okay. And then there's also the GMO, the grains. How do we know what grains to eat if some of those grains are genetically modified? I mean, who wants to eat those?
Well, they're genetically modified. They're poisoned with chemicals. You know, there's all kinds of problems. I'm not going to answer that. Maybe I can turn it off. I don't know. Just a minute. Okay, there you go. Took care of that.
Okay. So, go ahead.
You grow your own, or you have a relationship with someone else who grows their own, or you eat root vegetables. There are a lot of root starches, like potatoes, name, yuca, all kinds of root starches. There's all kinds of places to get carbs. And beans, while they are high in protein, they're also very high in carbs. Winter squash, very high in protein and carbs. So there's a lot of places to get your carbs. You do need them.
Okay. All righty. And fruits and vegetables and, okay, yeah. All righty. Well, let's talk, tomorrow's Veterans Day, so let's talk about Gulf War Syndrome.
There you go.
Which a lot of people, a lot of the veterans have.
Correct.
And it's terrible.
It's awful. Destroy your life.
And got this. I just have this feeling that maybe the United States does war to put a lot of people under their jurisdiction.
Absolutely, absolutely. Bingo.
So they can use them as guinea pigs.
Oh no, it's beyond that. It's
to destroy them.
It's deeper than that. What you need is you need a whole. First of all, if you leave men and women alone, just leave them alone. Let them work it out, whatever it is they're going to work out. The man is going to take the posture of defending the woman and the children. That's just the way males are programmed. The woman is going to take the posture of preparing food and feeding and healing the rest of the family. And the two of them are going to work together. This is the way it is. But if you take that male at the age of 18 to 22 and subject him to boot camp, to the crushing authority of the government, then at the end of that process, he is a weakened, he is a broken, compromised individual who lives in total fear of the government. That is the purpose of the military and the purpose of war. And ideally, you want to pass as many young people through that process as possible. Now, in our country, we have a second pathway called college. And what college does is it totally humiliates, humbles, compromises the man and gets him to misdirect his efforts towards non-productive things. Filling out paperwork is non-productive. It's not going to put food in your mouth on the table. But then they create this system where you fill out enough pieces of paper, you get some money, then you pay taxes on the money, and then you pay for gas to get to work, and you pay for the car, and then a little bit is left where you can go to the grocery store and buy poison food and feed your family. This is a game. And what they've done is they've indoctrinated these kids in the government K-12 program to get them ready to play this game. And so you've then taken pretty much 100% of the males, and you've derailed them so that they cannot protect the home and protect the woman or the family, or even provide for them in a meaningful, in a concrete way. So this guy, at the end of this process, whether he goes to war or whether he goes to college, doesn't matter. At the end of the process, he is not capable of building a house, building shelter for himself and his family. And he's not capable of either hunting game or growing a garden. So he basically is left in a position of being totally unable to provide for his family. Then, in the military, you got to keep the gender separate, so this guy cannot reproduce either. This is really the goal. And we focus on the body count. How many of the enemy has died? Oh, how many of the enemy has died? Oh, yeah, we're winning. Their body count is less than our body count. And so you miss the whole crushing hand of the government destroying the lives and the minds of these men.
Wow.
It's not about experimentation. And other drugs are damaging. It's not about, there's no experiment here. It's deliberate. There is no experiment. People need to just dismiss that.
Okay.
If the chemical was helpful, believe me, the troops wouldn't get it. The purpose of this is to control minds and the will of a whole, of each and every generation. That's the goal. And again, the people who are watching, the citizens, the parents, the siblings, who are watching this process are distracted by the body count, are distracted by the pretense or reason for war. But I see these veterans who come back, and I've seen the ones in my family, and I see their attitude and their behavior. They are so friggin' submissive. It's shocking. It's shocking to me. You know, their first thought is, you know, I want to obey the government. I don't want to come in conflict with the government. It's like this third rail. It's this intense fear, just the thought that what they are about to do might go against what the government thinks. And I'm just like, you know, because, you know, I talk to people, right? And
sure.
I always have since, you know, when I went to college, I talked to people, and people said, well, Jennifer, aren't you concerned about what the government thinks? Have you asked for permission to do this? I said, no, I haven't asked you permission. I think this is okay, and I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, ooh, you're dangerous. And now, let me tell you what I was contemplating. I was contemplating buying a vacant piece of land and building an office on it. That's all I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's no law against that. You know, the land is for sale. I'm willing to pay for it. That settles that piece. You know, I'm building a structure. The structure is just a place of a doctor's office. And I was asked by the director of superintendent for school, who gave you permission to do this? It never occurred to me I need to ask permission. Other than, you know, there's a little zoning thing. Okay, go to the zoning board, say, hey, can I have permission to use my property for this particular use, okay, zoning board approval, that's it. He said, no. I mean, it's a medical office. Have you checked with the hospitals and other doctors to get permission and make sure? Exactly. I'm like, no. If I'm willing to toss $250,000 in a hole and bury it, which is what it came down to, you know, the cost of the building, the contents, and the land,
mm-hmm.
What other intervention or approval was needed? I had no idea because I'd never been to the military, right? So I didn't know.
Right.
I was not aware of the crushing government. Also, I'd never, I was going to college. I went to Harvard. And everyone knows, man, if you go to Harvard, one thing you understand is authority. But, again, I was just going to Harvard because I wanted to get into medical school. I didn't have any other motive
mm-hmm.
for going. And so I missed all the authority thing. You know, I just like, oh, that's nice. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, okay. And even at Harvard, you know, they would say to me, Jennifer, don't do this. And I said, well, what's going to happen if I do? Nothing. I said, okay, I go ahead and do it. So, you know, my background is I grew up in an inner city neighborhood. And whenever someone gives you a direct order, the first thing you ask is, who's going to make me do it? You and whose army? What am I facing if I don't do it? Oh, there's no penalty? Well, get out of my face. I mean, that's the whole conversation. So when I got to Harvard, that was the same conversation, only on a more genteel level. Excuse me, Dean, what would be the penalty for that? Oh, there's no penalty? Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So it's the same conversation, but, you know, on a more genteel level. And so that's the way I just worked my way through Harvard. So all this, so the college experience, whether it's Harvard or whether it's a state school, doesn't matter, it trains the individual, especially the men, this is very important, it trains them to respond to the will of authority, even when there may not be any power behind it.
Right.
If you think about it, in college, what are you responding to? You're responding to a letter of A, B, C, or D on a piece of paper. You're getting, you're practicing being controlled and being influenced by a letter on a piece of paper that has nothing behind it.
Right.
And when I went to medical school, they said, Jennifer, you're going to an Ivy League school. I said, yes, I am. They said, well, we expect you to use this degree in a meaningful way. I said, what would that be? So we think you should specialize. I said, well, I'm interested in family practice. Well, we need to specialize. I said, well, are you going to pay me? Well, we're not saying that. I said, you're offering me a job. Well, we're not saying that. I said, okay, well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And so they realized going through that I was not willing to submit to authority just on somebody's say-so. Oh, you're going to give me a job in this specialty? Well, now we're talking. Oh, you're going to, there's some reward here. Or, oh, to respond to authority in the absence of reward or a penalty is absurd, I think. And that's what college trains people to do. And in the military, they can enforce severe penalties. You know, it's corporal punishment. There's all kinds of stuff they do to those poor guys. And, you know, you have the government controlling your food, controlling whether the temperature of what, controlling where you march and if you have any supplies. Incredible torture and strife and difficulty that they can be subjected to. And they're constantly reminded of the authority of the government, what they can and cannot talk about, where they can and cannot go. So in college, they're controlling people literally by the letter they write on a piece of paper, literally by opinions. And the thing is, after I went to Harvard, I'm like, let's get this straight. I'm paying you guys. You guys aren't paying me. I'm the one paying the bills here.
Right.
And so a lot of people, when they go to college, they don't. They, as soon as they sign that loan paper or whatever, they forget that they got some serious skin in the game. Excuse me, I, the student, am paying you. And so I'm calling the shots here. I'm telling you this is the kind of life I want to have, and I expect you to give me information I need to have that kind of life. And if you are not going to give me that information, then I'm going to feel free to look for it other, you know, someplace else.
Sure.
But because they've got these kids going to college, and these kids are signing pieces of paper whose importance they don't even recognize, the kids feel subordinate and acquiescent while they're in college.
As they did in high school and, well, their whole lives, they're subordinate to...
Yes, about creating a totally docile, subservient population trained to be so. And in college, of course, the big prize at the end is the kid now has a 20-year mortgage and no place to live. I mean, is that a joke? I mean, talk about really putting someone in a state of perpetual slavery, and that's what that is. And guess who holds the notes on these college loans? The government.
Wow.
Right. So you have someone who's enslaved themselves to the government, who's been indoctrinated and conditioned by the government, and that's the purpose of these two systems. And if you want to raise a child who's totally free, at least his mind is free, and he can. If once your mind is free, you can free yourself. I tell you that. I'll testify to that. Then don't send him to school, to the army, or to college, for that matter.
Right.
And you'll find yourself with a very productive human who is very wealthy. In other words, a person who's uneducated earning minimum wage is better off than an educated person whose student loans are so high that he's homeless.
Indeed.
That's what we have. That's what we have going on. The other thing, too, is if you have this uneducated person, and we'll say unindoctrinated person, they're going to see that health insurance makes no sense. They're going to see that going to the doctor makes no sense. And most Americans, if they didn't have health insurance and didn't go to the doctor, they will be healthier and wealthier in a blink. All of a sudden, you really could make ends meet working 20 hours a week. You know, if you escape the healthcare delusion, the education delusion, then there's the energy delusion, which is who needs electricity after the sun goes down anyway. And then you can escape the food delusion. Most any place in the United States, the land is so friggin' fertile, you can feed yourself easily 3 to 4 months out the year just on weeds by not even going to the grocery store. I can tell you that because I did it, me and my kids. Of course, it was an exercise because my income was substantial. But I was surprised that I did not have to go to the grocery store to buy vegetables or fruits. I had a couple of fruit trees in the backyard, and we had vegetables growing. And it's amazing how few leaves of cabbage you need to make a dinner for four.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, I once lived, we had a place about an acre and a quarter. And gosh, we had all these trees and asparagus roots and strawberry patch. And I mean, we just literally lived off of what we grew, totally, completely, except we got the milk from the farmer down the road and we had to buy paper products from the store. But we were literally just living on what we grew, and I would can all summer or freeze things. And it was wonderful. Absolutely.
Right, so take
wonderful.
The average American, cut their food bill by 75%, eliminate their health insurance, eliminate their co-pays and deductibles, and eliminate any doctor visits, and skip the education, whether it's K-12 or K-25, and you've got a pretty wealthy individual there.
Exactly.
Wealthy in terms of time and money. That's the shocker.
Right.
Because that's always the conundrum. Oh, I have plenty of time but no money, plenty of money but no time. But you get rid of all these illusions, all these lies, all these mirages that people are paying a lot of money for, and all of a sudden people have tons of time and tons of money.
Wow. And happiness, satisfaction in growing your own things and taking care of yourself and making your own decisions.
Or just satisfaction, being freaking lazy, just sitting around doing nothing,
right.
Feeling good about it because you don't have a bill that's going to come due that you can't pay.
Right.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful if we all knew this at the same time. For instance, my kids are, you know, if I had it to do over again, I would have had them at home.
Yep.
I would have homeschooled them. It would have been so different.
Right. But I didn't know either. I did have them at home. I figured that out. So they butchered me on the second one. So they had a third one. Do you know how much money it cost me to have that baby at home?
Probably nothing. I mean,
oh no! I was a doctor, so I had to overspend. I had to shoot the moon. I had to, you know, I had all the equipment there, everything.
How much?
$250.
Wow.
$250 it cost, and I mean, I had IV set up. I had some Nubane, which is a synthetic morphine. Had an oxygen tank. Had a precipitous delivery kit with everything from the hospital. $250. And then I had other supplies I didn't even use.
Wow.
So, you know, what women don't understand is even if you have a baby with technology, by technology I mean, you know, IV setup, all that other stuff, the dollar amount of that stuff is not even $200.
Right.
And they're charging you $11,000 for a routine hospital delivery now? I understand.
You're kidding.
routine. You had to have a C-section and stay 18 days to get a bill like that when I was having kids. I know, because I did have a C-section and stayed 18 days.
Oh, my gosh.
But people have no idea how truly worthless the care they're receiving is, and to what extent they really are being taken for a fabulous ride. When I say a ride, I mean a ride like Disney World. Lots of excitement, lots of thrills. You feel like something awful is going to happen. It never does. And at the end, you're pretty much back where you started.
Right. And then you have a baby that might have already received a hepatitis B shot. And
oh, forget that. The kid's been, you got prenatal care because you thought it was the thing to do. This kid has been irradiated. He's been ultrasound to death. You've been given umpteen drugs. Needles have been stuck into your womb. This kid's been invaded so many ways before he's born. So many ways.
Yeah, you used to, they do have ultrasounds now. They have all of these other things, and you think.
Yeah, the monitoring, which shoots these sound waves at the kid during labor. It's like bombs are going off. That's the way the kid's ear perceives it. And so these kids come out yelling and screaming, and we're told a healthy kid, oh, he's screaming, he's got a healthy lung. No. A normal kid being born, he just slips out nice and quietly, and then, you know, over a period of 1 to 2 minutes, he just starts opening his mouth and sucking, and then his eyes open. It's a nice, peaceful process. You get to see the life just literally filling this little body. That's a natural birth. A hospital birth, the kid comes out yelling and screaming, waving his arms, trying to defend himself. You know something awful's out here.
Right. And then if it's a little boy, they're going to want to circumcise him.
And do you know what happens when they circumcise him?
They go into shock.
The foreskin is sold for industrial research and viral research.
Yeah.
Every single piece and pot, you know, so they make you pay for a circumcision, so they get a piece of tissue they can sell.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is truly amazing. Absolutely.
But we're going to talk about Gulf War syndrome.
Okay. Gulf War. But all of this is the things that you have shared with us already is just very, very informative, very, well, hopefully it will help somebody to make a different choice. And these are things that, you know, that I wish that I had the opportunity to choose. And in my next life, that's the way I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And we try and share this information, you know, with our children. And, of course, they are so trained to disrespect anything but government authority.
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It is government authority.
Yeah. I mean, the doctor is certified by the government. If he tells you anything the government doesn't want you to know, he loses his certification. I can testify to that. Here I am.
Right. But you're better off. You're
Oh, yeah. Much better off.
Yeah.
Much, much, much better off.
Well,
Gulf War syndrome.
Yeah, go ahead.
I started my medical practice in 1991. So the Gulf War was kicking off. Actually, kicked off, I think, the year before. And so, you know, a lot of people were going to the Gulf War. I had neighbors that went to the Gulf War. I don't have any relatives that went. But neighbors went, and it was just quite something. Everyone was going to the Gulf War. And somewhere around, I guess, 92, this person walked in my office, and he was obviously not well. And he said, hey, I went to the Gulf War, and I think they poisoned me, and I'm trying to go to the VA to get help, and I think they're trying to kill me. Well, just about now, I was like, oh, boy, wait a minute.
Right.
And so he had returned from the Gulf War. He was married, and I think he had 3 children. And he returned from the war only to find he totally lost his health. He lost his ability to work and is about to lose his marriage. And he had all these bizarre symptoms. They were tormenting him and really threatened to destroy his life totally. And so he found his way to health and fathered a healthy child who's now, I guess, 14 years old. And so when he came to me, I knew nothing about Gulf War syndrome. All I knew about war was you should try and avoid them. That's all I knew about war. And so he told me all these symptoms. You know, he had these thoughts in his head that he couldn't control. He had this incredible rash all over his body that itched terribly, and he would scratch it raw. He had chronic sinus problems and developed these secretions and, back problems and all kinds of stuff. And he had constipation and he had sweating. And so all this stuff just didn't add up. And before he went to the war, he had none of these symptoms. He was even-tempered, balanced, capable person who was able to collect his thoughts and control his thoughts. He was working on high-level computer communication systems with encryption, all kinds of stuff. This is what he was able to do. And so he went to the Gulf War, he came back, and he developed such a case of agoraphobia that he was not able to leave his home in Australia to take care of his clients. He had computer clients. He was making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, doing very well. And he just one day just couldn't leave his room.
Wow.
So I noticed this, right, because this is a money stream here.
Sure.
Honey. And so she took him to the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, it's a post-war veteran thing. We're going to put you in a group where you guys talk it out, you know, work it out. So he went to the group therapy, and that didn't work. Then he came back to the States with his wife and children. He's an American citizen. His wife is Australian. So he came back to the States, and he had a sister who was very well connected with the VA. She says, hey, I have connections to the VA. I'm going to get you the best. And so he had an appointment with the best, and the best recommended Paxil, which totally threw him for the loop. He said, no, we're not going to do that. And so they then recommended another drug, which really threw him for a loop. And he said, no, can't do that. And then he went back to his sister. His sister, you know, his sister lived in the neighborhood where my medical practice was, and everyone thought I was crazy for opening a medical practice in the middle of the ghetto. It's like, you're stupid. And so she said to him, you know, this is crazy doctor here who opened this practice, but everyone says she's pretty nice. Why don't you go see her? They also say she's really different. So he came to see me, and like I said, he immediately started explaining to me all these people who are out to get him, and of course his wife, he told me, was trying to murder him. And he didn't know if he was going to have to murder her first. He was a Marine. I'm not sure if he's a Navy SEAL, but he's certainly a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's worried about that he might have to, you know, murder her because
he's paranoid.
Exactly. Not only was he paranoid, but here we have his wife's in danger. His wife's life's in danger. Whoa, boy, now what do we do?
Right.
Now, if I was a regular doctor, I would have called the police right then and had him arrested. But I was not a regular doctor, and my patients paid me cash. So if they got arrested and went to jail, then I didn't get paid. So I'm like, nah, it's not going to work. So I said to him, have you considered that maybe your wife doesn't want to kill you? He says, no, I'm pretty sure. I said, well, you know, I know that she's not trying to kill you. He says, really? I said, yep, I know. So how do you know? I said, well, did she sleep with you? He says, well, yeah. I said, well, does she cook food for you? He said, yeah. Do you eat what she cooks? Oh, yeah. I said, well, if she wanted to murder you, you'd already be dead. You wouldn't even tell me about it because she would have put poison in your food and you'd be dead. Or she would just stab you through the chest while you're sleeping. Either way, you know, she has so much opportunity to kill you, and you're totally defenseless. So if she wanted to kill you, you would be dead. He thought about that because, of course, there's this competing paranoid craziness, and then there's a glimmer of just logic. And even in his delusion, he had to work that out. And he said, you know, I don't think you're right. She can't possibly be plotting against me. So then I was like, okay, no need to call anybody. Now we can start working on what the problem is. And so he told me that he'd gone to Death and Storm. He did not tell me, and I didn't know it was relevant, and I didn't know to ask, was that there were pills that they were given, physostigmine bromide. Physostigmine bromide is believed, well, first of all, it's used therapeutically for myasthenia gravis, which is an autoimmune disease. But physostigmine bromide is considered to be the preventative medicine to use to protect against gas poisoning, bioterrorism in war. And it protects against a nerve gas called Soman. And Soman is the nerve gas they believe that the Iraqis had in their possession. And so while he was over there, he was commanded to take, he was high enough rank where he could refuse pills, some guys couldn't. So he took approximately 4 of the Soman tablets. Many people have said, oh, the Desert Storm is due to soda pop and in the heat. He said, no, he didn't drink any soda pop while he was there. And shots, he didn't get any shots at all. But he did get these tablets. And they were not told the name of the tablets. They were told in order to take the tablets, they had to sign an affidavit indicating they never took the tablets.
Wow. I would definitely not be signing any papers or taking any tablets.
Well, the papers say, I so-and-so did not take blah, blah, blah tablets. So the government knew there was something wrong with these tablets.
Right.
But now, having signed that form, because you're not free to not sign the form, anybody can tell you, you just cheek the pills and spit them out later.
Right.
Right. But he didn't do that. He swallowed. He swallowed only 4, I believe, is what he admitted to. He swallowed 4. And that's when things started falling apart. And things started falling apart while he was still out there in the field, but he didn't appreciate that because, you know, he was a Marine, and all this excessive sweating and these emotional feelings, he was trained to just push that aside. You know, push that aside. It's just nothing to worry about. And then he got back to Australia, and these symptoms grew and increased, and he found his concentration was poor. His brain couldn't work as well to solve technical problems that he was just accustomed to solving. And that's when he realized that things were pretty bad. So when I saw him, he was very fortunate. He had this business generating incredible sums of money. And he had a little disability policy that paid him $7,000 a month, which was a fair amount of change.
Exactly, yeah.
In Syracuse, in the little ghetto where I lived. And he lived there, too. He bought a house. And so by coming to see me, he was able to get certified as disabled and collect the $7,000 a month. So that was a big deal,
mm-hmm.
The big reason that he had to see me. And because the VA was unable to help him, it was declared not service-related.
Oh, wow.
Very important because no disability plan pays off if something's service-related.
Oh.
But the U.S. government had denied any Gulf War syndrome existed. It had denied giving people any medications of any kind because they didn't give any vaccines, right? So they were off the hook there. And the men signed a statement saying they never took these tablets that they were given.
Right.
So the government had full deniability.
But then they did have Paxil and probably Prozac that was just really...
No, not over there. Not over there.
Okay. Just over there in Iraq. Okay.
Yeah. So over there in Iraq, all they had was those pills.
Okay.
But because the U.S. government totally denied having given them anything, and because the VA was totally unable to be of any assistance, then it was clear that officially this could not be related to the Gulf War.
Wow.
Now, what happened then later on was... the doctors got so many people coming in and saying, hey, you know, I've got this these problems. I've got this dizziness. I've got this rash. I've got these weird thoughts and emotions. I've got this sweating. I've got this sinus problem. I've got all these things. And so the doctors said, well, something has got to be going on. You know, what could it be? And so what he did then was these doctors got the records from the government where the government admitted to giving pyridostigmine to the troops. And that just blew everything open. Unfortunately, this article was not very well publicized. And so let me give you this doctor's name. His name is Dr. Haley. So people can get this reference
Is that Boyd Haley or?
I don't know. He looks like a pretty unhealthy guy. They include his picture, which is not always a good thing. Dr. Robert W. Haley.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dr. Haley is really upset because he says the illness is controversial. The U.S. government has never acknowledged that Gulf War Syndrome is a real illness, and many people still believe it's psychological. And in analyzing medical tests, analyzing brain function, Gulf War veterans who complain of dizziness showed results similar to those of victims of the Tokyo subway nerve gas attack. And damage is causing your symptoms, according to a report published in the March issue of ENT, Otorhinolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery. Our tests show that dizziness is not anxiety or stress. This is Dr. Peter Rowland. It is a sign of brain damage. They have severe fatigue, body pain, and my guy had all these things. Severe fatigue, body pain, memory problems. After several in-depth interviews with these veterans, we realized the problem. We tried these specialized tests, and a test located the cause of the symptoms in the brain. And the veterans have been experiencing these unpredictable attacks of vertigo, dizziness, where things suddenly seem to spin around them. And it's not hard to imagine how this could explain the higher death rates from motor vehicle accidents, Haley said. And so what they found was that Gulf War vets had more car accidents. It's because, of course, here they are driving down the road, and all of a sudden everything spins, and then what do? Slam on the brakes, you know, the guy behind you bumps into you, you know, there's just no graceful way out of that. And so Haley identified three distinct syndromes, each linked to various Gulf War chemical exposures, including pesticides, insect repellents, chemical warfare agents, and pyridostigmine bromide tablets soldiers took to combat effects of nerve gas.
Wow.
So he got the information from the government admitting that these soldiers were given pyridostigmine bromide tablets. And you can go to, and I'll give your readers this site, www.fda.gov/downloads/drugs/emergency-preparedness/bioterrorism-and-drug-preparedness/UCM133154.pdf.
Well, so, do you want to copy that into the Skype window, and then I will give it to the to the people in the chat room? That would be good.
Yeah, so here it is, right here.
This is just amazing.
Oh, here it is.
And this is so reminiscent.
And the thing is, so this is a fact. This is documented. This is known. There is no, the government has confessed, yes, they got these tablets. So let's look at the package insert for pyridostigmine bromide. So it says, adverse events, abdominal pain, diarrhea, twitching, muscle pain, dry skin, urinary frequency, nosebleed, wandering eyes, neck pain, worsening of asthma and bronchitis, elevated blood pressure, decreased heart rate, chest tightness, change in vision, eye pain, headache, hypertonia means excessive muscle tone, difficulty concentrating, confusion, disturbed sleeping, tingling of extremities, numbness of the tongue, increased sweating, rash, alopecia, hit all of these, vomiting, loud, noisy bowel sounds, nausea, bloating, flatulence, warm sensation, you can call it hot flashes, lethargy, drowsiness, depressed mood. During safety studies, it recommended dosages, there are two reports of loss of consciousness, that's passing out.
Wow.
Urinary and fecal incontinence, stiffness of the upper torso and arms, post-fainting skin pallor, post-fainting confusion, post-fainting weakness, suggesting a seizure. As with any compound containing bromide, a skin rash may be observed in an occasional patient, which usually is subsides promptly upon discontinuation of the medication, usually, which means sometimes it doesn't. Now, bromide, I want you to know, bromine is a common ingredient in bread.
Right,
and it causes all these symptoms. So put that in your pipe and smoke it in terms of gluten sensitivity.
Right.
All right, so that is the reaction you're going to get if you take physostigmine bromide. Let's take a look at the reactions if you take Soman, if you get gas poisoning, okay? And this is another website, .gov website, CDC, which tells you the effects of Soman gas poisoning. Now, I'm going to read this, and I know you guys maybe didn't understand, remember everything I said, but it's going to sound familiar. People exposed to low or moderate dose of Soman by breathing it in, inhalation, or swallowing it, or skin absorption may experience some or all of the following symptoms within seconds to hours of exposure. Abnormally low or high blood pressure, check, same as physostigmine. Blurred vision, check, same as physostigmine. Chest tightness, check, same as physostigmine. Confusion, check, same as physostigmine. Cough, diarrhea, drooling, excessive sweating, drowsiness, eye pain, headache, increased urination, all physostigmine side effects. Nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, rapid breathing, runny nose, slower, fast heart rate, all the same as physostigmine.
Wow.
Exactly. They gave the troops a drug that mimicked gas poisoning.
Wow.
This resulted in Gulf War syndrome, and it was a pretense to say, hey, we think the Iraqis gassed our troops. Oh, my God. And this was great for the people back home, like, oh, my God, those people are evil. Never mind, we had no reason to invade them, no reason to be there. They poisoned our troops. And a huge, huge false flag. At what expense? At the expense of the health of a whole generation. But again, it feeds into the basic plan of sending people to war so that they can be compromised, so they can be damaged, so when they come back to the States, they cannot be in any way disobedient to the government. I mean, just in the natural day course of events, I mean, in my case, I just went ahead and built an office building where I wanted to. How was I to know the government didn't really want an office building there and didn't want the citizens of the neighborhood to have any choices in health care?
And when these people come back, the first place that they're going to turn to for help is to the government that actually damaged them to begin with.
Exactly.
And they're not getting any. They won't get anything.
No, they are getting something. They're getting more harm.
Right, Paxil and all these wonderful things that we...
To finish them off, that's right, and that's what it's doing. It's a very high suicide rate.
Wow. And then I have a friend who's been on the program several times. Her name is Buthena. She was born in Baghdad, and she has told us the real truth behind that famous picture that many people have seen of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. And we are told that that was when Rumsfeld went over there in 1986 and sold Saddam Hussein all of these bioweapons.
Correct.
And she said what Saddam Hussein was actually doing was saying, no, we're not going to we're going to maintain our friendship with the Palestinians. We're not going to give you the commission, the profits from our oil industry. And there was one other thing that they weren't going to do. And they've used this picture to promote this lie that is, well, it is just that, a big, huge lie. And then they also did something in Congress. One of the congressmen, who is very compromised, wrote this document saying, yeah, it was Saddam Hussein and he was going to be arrested for something else or investigated for some other criminal thing. Imagine somebody in Congress committing a crime, but he was actually going to be investigated. And so he had to come up with, what was his name, Regal? He had to come up with this paper saying, yes, it was Saddam Hussein and all that gas. And so that is what people still believe today.
Well, that's the way our Congress is controlled. They won't let anyone or support anyone for Congress unless they are a criminal and have a background and have something that can be held over their head.
Exactly.
Right. So we should not expect anything from Congress that might be either beneficial or truthful.
Right.
Right. So I mean, don't look in the sewer for roses, you know.
Gosh. I've never heard Congress called sewer, but that couldn't be that. That is just perfect. The sewer, the sewage of Washington D.C. Oh gosh, amazing. And so these people come back, and they've been obedience trained to look to the government for help.
Exactly. And the government takes the knife and literally, figuratively, actually beheads them with a sword, or just, you know, basically gives them the Paxil, and they think that they're getting help, and, you know, they're just being further damaged and harmed.
Right. And it's interesting that they introduced Prozac in January of 88, and then the Gulf War was, the first Gulf War was shortly thereafter. I mean, it's just kind of amazing how these things happen. And then they also increased the vaccine schedule in 91. And they also...
They increased that schedule every single year, my God.
And they did it again as part of the Patriot Act. And increased it again with the 2003 invasion.
The Americans, what the Americans don't realize is the Americans are the true objective, the true victims of the war.
Yes.
In other words, our government declares war not for the sake of any enemy, but for the sake of destroying its own citizens and destroying their individual power and their power to either resist the government or their power to engage in any kind of willful independent activity.
Exactly. And with all this destruction of able-bodied people within the country, there's nobody that's going to fight against the evil people. I mean, there's 545 people, including the Supreme Court. There's no one that's able-bodied enough to go against that government. Besides, they've been brainwashed to believe that the government is all-powerful.
Yes, but I have found out that my brother, who has five children, two of his five children are employed in the police state. One works for, I think it's American ACA. He works enforcing the Affordability Health Care Act. The other one works for NSA in procurement, procuring weapons. What does NSA need with weapons? Isn't NSA a domestic agency?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so my brother assures me that the weapons she's making sure they have in stock and ready for use are only to defend the United States citizens. At that point, there was no point in continuing the conversation. I just changed the subject.
Sure.
But, let's not play the helpless card, because we're not. Any time that those kids realize what they're doing in the name of a paycheck, they'll stop. As soon as an individual realizes that they're going to work every day to fashion the very chains that are going to bind them, they'll stop it. Like, no, you can't pay me to be a part of this system that's going to turn around and knock down my door tomorrow. That's stupid.
Sure.
So these kids believe that they are, even though they're only the baby toe of the ogre, they're the good part. And what people need to understand is if you have a destructive entity, there is no good part.
Right.
It's all one big body. And just because you're the fingernail on the baby toe doesn't mean that you're engaged in goodness. When that ogre is advancing forward to destroy your parents, their home, your life, you know.
Right. And it is amazing. It's so compartmentalized that people really don't realize that they are part of the big problem. And look at all of the government jobs beginning
at... Exactly. And the thing is, it is not compartmentalized. People thinking is compartmentalized. You know, if you object, if you sincerely object to the government spying on you, then why are you working for the number one spying agency of the government?
Sure.
To the extent that you go to work every day and do your job, I don't care if you're sweeping the floor, you're facilitating the whole spying operation.
Right.
And I get more and more people that I meet from the United States, you know, they're, oh, what do you do? Oh, I work in black ops. break into people's homes and take their stuff and repossess this and that. And so this person can't see that he's part of the very thing he objects to.
Wow. Now, how do you rectify that? How does the average person rectify that?
Average person doesn't rectify anything. Each person has to decide they're going to stop being average. They're going to start being exceptional. In other words, they're going to start making exceptional sacrifices, but they're going to start thinking exceptional thoughts, thoughts that may be prohibited by some all-seeing eye that is just a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people need to totally dispense with, oh, I want to be an average Joe following the crowd. No, that's the first thing you have to dispense with. I don't care who you are, you're not average. You just aren't. You are not average. No individual is average. Each individual is exceptional. You take all these individuals and you add up all their qualities in some measured parameter and you take an average. But each person is exceptional on some particular scale. And you need to make up your mind that it's time for you to stop pretending to be average because you're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for you to stop being helpless because you're not. And it's time for you to, at least in your own life, stand up, accept responsibility for as many things as you can. I mean, the big problem with Americans is we have allowed our lives to be fragmented. Women are outsourcing fertility. They're outsourcing childbearing. They're outsourcing feeding your children. They're outsourcing the education. You need to start taking that back one thing at a time.
Right. And of course, I think it begins with health, that you take responsibility for your own health and not outsource it to some doctor who spends 10 minutes with you and hands you a bottle of poison.
Well, not only did he spend even if he spent 10 hours with you, he's under directions from the government. At the end of that visit, you are getting poison. It doesn't matter how much time he spends with you. It doesn't even matter how much he understands. He is under orders. He is totally supervised. Your medical records are now electronic health records that appear online instantaneously before you even get home. The government knows about your health visit. So the doctor's not enabled. He's not in a position to deviate from his lethal orders.
Right, because now the government can look and see your record, and
right.
If you did not receive a prescription, then the doctor is going to be in trouble.
And if you did receive a prescription, the next look to see if the pharmacy record, if it was filled.
Right, because they have it all online. They have it all digitized, right?
It is online. It's online. Doctors got to put those health records online before you even leave the office. It's called EHR, electronic health records, and there are companies charged with maintaining them. But that doctor has got to put that electronic health record online in order for him to get paid.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So, is that for Medicare and Blue Cross or Medicare? It's for the insurance companies.
Everything.
Too. Everything. It's not.
That's
just
the purpose of Healthcare Act. The Healthcare Act affects all records, whether you're on welfare, whether you're paying privately through the nose. All doctors have to have electronic health records and have to put those records online.
Wow. And they do have to, in fact, I know that some pharmaceutical companies have offered, and this was several years ago, offered to totally update the doctor's computer systems.
Oh, yeah, and they still do. Absolutely.
Wow.
Now, you know that when they update his system for free, there's a back door that feeds them information, of course.
Wow.
That's what makes it free.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this covers all insurance policies, the government, whatever.
And the doctor's got to do it to maintain his licensure. The doctors have to go to electronic health records, and they've been objecting, they've been protesting, they're kicking and screaming, because typing is not a class that you get in medical school, right?
Right.
So producing an electronic health record is not easy for the doctor to do.
Sure.
The hard-tech method.
Right. So they have to have people that can do this for them. Although, one of the last times, I haven't been to the doctor for maybe 3 years, to my regular doctor, the regular doctor that I used to go to.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her for probably 3 years. And she typed things into her little handheld device as I was sitting there.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
They have things called snippets. You type in 3 or 4 letters, boom, a whole sentence appears.
Right, okay.
Right.
And she asked me, she said, and I'd gotten quite close to her as a friend. She bought one of my my art quilt several years ago and whatnot. And so I'd been to her house, and she was complaining. She said, I asked her how she was doing, and she was really complaining about the Affordable Health Care Act and everything, and also complaining about the fact that now some of the drugstores were, and the hospital that she's associated with, is now farming some of their stuff out, their vaccines, to drugstores and whatnot. And she says, gosh, they're taking away my patients. And during the same visit, she asked me if I wanted a flu shot, and I just laughed, and I said, are you getting one? And she knows that I know, you know, so...
Right.
And she said, you're going to get a mammogram? I said, no. And she says, well, it saves lives. And that is what they always say. It saves lives, no matter what they're offering you.
That's what doctors are told. Mammograms save lives. They don't give us any evidence that it saves lives. They don't show us the research.
Right.
Because think, doctors are trained to respond to authority, instant belief. And that's what the whole process is. That's why doctors have to go through 4 years of college and 4 years of medical school and 3 years of residency before they can practice, because that process is trains in the knee-jerk belief in authority, never questioning authority, immediately believe. If you allow people like you do in Panama, you start medical school right after high school in Panama.
Wow.
And so, of course, the doctors have a little bit of independence in their thinking left. And they'll offer a cholesterol drug, but they have no illusions. They're offering this drug so they can make money, you know,
sure,
on the side effects.
Sure.
And so if you refuse a cholesterol drug from a doctor, you know, he's not going to get too bent out of shape about it. He'll just ask the next person.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, as you mentioned, all these side effects.
Side effects are the point. If you take blood pressure medicine long enough, you're going to develop diabetes. And if you keep taking it, you're going to develop kidney failure and need for dialysis. So the doctors know that if I can get this patient taking this medicine for a certain length of time, these particular side effects, which is more diseases, are going to occur, and I'll have more work to do. Where my patient practice, it was a cash practice, so the sicker they got, the less money I got, because they just couldn't afford to work to pay for my visits. So that was a loser. And then if they picked up these new diseases, that meant they got sicker, and they would wake me up at night, and I didn't get any sleep. That was a loser. And so I had different parameters at work. I was solo practice, and the practice was cash. So if I disabled my patients, I didn't have an insurance company that's going to choke the money up.
Right.
And so patients or people are going to doctors who take their insurance, and they don't understand the profound conflict of interest. If your doctor's taking your insurance, first of all, the insurance company calls the shots. But second of all, he has no incentive whatever to keep you healthy, because his bill gets paid whether you get healthy or drop dead. In fact, it's better if he can keep you in the high misery suffering area. They'll keep you coming back frequently, and then the insurance company will pay him more money over time because they pay him less per visit, but he makes it up on volume, you see.
Right. Wow. And as you say, you just get sicker and sicker and sicker. And I have a friend, and her husband is developed Alzheimer's, and right. I said, well, that was probably from the flu shots that you were getting. And
yep.
And people don't know. They just don't know that.
But they believe. They believe, and that's it. They believe. And your life is a product of your beliefs.
Indeed.
And so people need to alter their beliefs. That's part of healing. And in my practice, that was the most shocking thing to people. If I would say to them, look, I don't want you to believe anything. Don't even think. I'm going to give you a list of things to do and just do it, and we'll see you back in a week, and then we'll talk about it. They're like, okay. They would do it. They would get better, and they would come back in a week, and they were very upset. I said, oh, what's the matter? Your headache's gone. Your aches and pains are better. Da-da-da-da. I make it go through the list, right? Oh, this is good. I said, Dr. Daniels, this shatters every belief that I've had. And so what happened was their beliefs would be shattered. And so then you have the problem, or they have the problem, of rebuilding a new set of beliefs. But I'll tell anyone who's listening right now, if you're sick, it's because of your belief system.
Right.
Now what I found is it's much easier to not deal with a person's belief system off the bat, because that requires a whole lot of discussion and rationalization and da-da-da.
Right.
The truth of the matter is, stuff works. I don't know why it works. You want to make up a story for you? Okay, I'll do my best. The truth of the matter is, if it works, it works. That's all there is to it. So I don't worry about people's beliefs. I just say, this is what I think you should do. Is this something you can do? And sometimes they'll say, well, you know, it's against my beliefs. I say, well, which part's against your beliefs? And we'll take a look at that part, and I'll say, well, if that is against your beliefs, you can't do that. Well, how about this? We try and work out something that's consistent with their present beliefs. And then they go do that, they get better, and then they realize, oh, maybe I need to revise some beliefs here.
Sure.
But at the root of healing is you've got to change your beliefs. Why? Beliefs lead to actions, and the actions lead to results. It's not a belief until you act on it.
Right. Well, let's get back to what you did for that Gulf War veteran.
Yeah.
Okay, so he got over the belief that his wife was trying to kill him.
Thank God.
He could have killed her.
Yeah, he was ready. He was trained.
He would have killed her, ended up in prison.
His family would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened to him?
So I convinced him that his wife was not going to kill him. That was not her intention at all. And I said, look, I can't tell you what's wrong with you exactly, but I've seen people have similar things, and this seems to have worked, so let's do this. So I put him on a 100% unprocessed food diet, 100% organic, took him off his coffee. He was a coffee addict and a cigarette smoker. So we had to give him some herbs to stop his cigarette smoking. And he tapered down his coffee intake, his cigarette smoking, and his white flour intake. He decreased all those together. Then I put him on just all natural, unrefined food of any sort. And I believe I did put him on Vitality capsules to help him have regular bowel movements.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a rash that covered 70% of his body. And we got rid of that rash to where it covered 0% of his body.
Now, was that toxins trying to get
so
out?
Now, exactly. So we gave him a way out. Also, it was even parasites that were eating his food. So got rid of his rash, got rid of his paranoid thoughts. His energy came back. His thoughts became more organized. His wife fell in love with him, and they had another child, and the child was healthy.
Wow. And he also had parasites?
But basically, yeah, changed diet. I don't test for parasites. I just deduce that he must have had parasites.
Okay.
Because I also gave him turpentine. So I gave him turpentine, Vitality capsules, put him on a totally unrefined diet, switched his beverages to water, and that's what did it, turned it around. His wife showed up 2 weeks later after he started this program, because this guy's a Marine, right?
Right.
He does it, gets it done. So he just went straight full bore ahead and just did this, totally on faith, because that's just the way he was. He took the Paxil that the doctors gave him totally on faith. It didn't work. So he just did this the same way he did the Paxil. He just did exactly what he was told. So in 2 weeks, his wife makes an appointment and comes in. And so I'm wondering what is, you know,
right.
She can't be sick.
Right.
She wasn't sick. So she made an appointment, I always weighed the patients and took their height, had her come in the room and sit down. Well, she sat down, crossed her legs, pulled out a notepad and pen, ready to write, and said, I want to know exactly what diet my husband needs to be on so I can help him with it because it's working.
Wow.
She confessed to me that she had stopped sleeping with him, and she was sleeping on the couch downstairs because he was just so awful. And that now he's so charming that, you know, they're back together again, they're sharing the same bed, and she's thinking about maybe birth control. So I point out to her that when people eat healthy like this and they become very pleasant and easy, that, you know, there is definitely a possibility of getting pregnant.
Right.
Whereas before, of course, there was none because she wouldn't have anything to do with them. And she says, oh, okay, well, that's fine. So I think I don't know if she decided to accept the birth control or not, But she decided not to take it. And so she got pregnant. She was very happy with her pregnancy. And she had a nice, healthy child at home.
Wow. Amazing.
And that child is 14 years old now and is just a loving, adorable, wonderful child.
That is just a terrific story. And really...
Now, they did not vaccinate. They homeschooled her. And so they're in the process of just raising another, at least a healthy generation.
Right. Now, I think, well, about birth control. What do you, I mean, a lot of people are on that birth control. Is that really safe? Is there another natural?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Not safe at all. Young women are dying of heart attacks, getting profoundly depressed, gaining 20 to 30 pounds, experiencing personality changes. It's just destroying the lives of young people. And what it does is it makes it impossible to have a relationship. I mean, that's the real birth control, if you ask me. My opinion on birth control is if you want to control your birth and your fertility, I would strongly recommend the Rhythm Method. It actually is effective. When used properly, it's 100% effective. And what they do is they roll in the people who don't use it with the ones who do use it. I personally think that mothers need to work with their daughters and teach them about the Rhythm Method when they first start having periods. The girl should be taking her temperature, monitoring her cycles, keeping track, understanding when she's fertile, understanding when she's not. That is the proper form of birth control.
And then there's the Premarin thing that people are, you know, when you get to a certain age.
Yeah, the horse piss.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
The horse piss.
They kill these poor little foals. I mean, I got this little booklet about what Pfizer, I think they're the makers of this Premarin stuff. And, I mean, what mm-hmm. they do to the animals to get this ingredients for these pills that people are taking, that are they're ingesting, is just unbelievable. And I'm totally...
Yeah, and the thing is, every cruelty they visit upon these animals is visited upon or experienced by the women who take these pills. They are devastating. And that's what people don't believe. And it's the real crux of the matter, what makes this whole thing so easy to perpetuate, this fraud of labeling something healthcare when in fact it's murdering 880,000 Americans every year, is that people expect something for nothing. And people don't get this. But I'll tell you now, if you take the posture that from this day forward in your life, you will only accept something you pay for. If you don't pay for it, you don't want it. That one posture will make you very wealthy, and it will make you very healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, I think that to this, and what you say I think is very true, that people a lot of people have said, oh, yeah, well, now we're going to have free health care. With the Affordable Care Act, we're going to be able to have access to health care. And the people will use it more because it's free. They think they're getting something for nothing. And, of course, people like something easy. They don't want to change their lifestyle. Just give me a pill or give me something easy to do so that I don't have to take responsibility. And they're going to run to the doctor or the emergency room or wherever for the smallest little indication that they might have something wrong instead of allowing their body to take care of itself.
So you want to hear a joke, a comment?
Oh, yes. Yes, we haven't done any of your jokes.
So these two guys are talking. The first guy says, hey, what do you think is Affordable Health Care Act? Second guy says, well, I didn't mind robbing Peter to pay Paul until I found out that I was Peter.
Yeah.
So there is no free lunch. You're going to pay. You're going to pay through the nose. And what many people are finding is their health insurance premiums are going sky high. And this is not insurance, it's extortion. The other thing that's happening, though, and it's like only speaks to the Medicare population because that's they're measuring that, those numbers are in, is that older people's use of Medicare is declining, even though the number of old folks is increasing. So from that, I deduce that old folks have figured it out. The more they see the doctor, the sicker they get, and so they're just staying home. And so the solvency of the Medicare system, or the insolvency, is not as immediate as they thought because people just aren't showing up.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, my mother's 83, and the last four times she went to the doctor, he gave her something that, that left her worse off. And so she calls me, and she says, I'm not going back to the doctor because I'm already 83 years old. I've lived longer than what they can help me live anyway. I said, well, Mom, very good, very good. I mean, whatever reason she gave me, I would say very good, very good.
Sure.
I'm not ever going to the doctor again because I believe in Santa Claus. Mom, very good, very good.
Yeah, well, the lady that cuts my hair has a mother-in-law who's in her 90s. I think she's like 93. And the doctor, her doctor still wants her to get a mammogram. And Cheryl, my friend, said, Mom, you know you're 93. Do you really need to be worrying about whether or not you're going to get breast cancer at this time in your life? And but older people, too, there's two different kinds. There's the people who are so indoctrinated that they think that they have to go and get their mammogram, that they have to take their flu shot because, well, the doctor said. And my friend has just really tried to talk her mother-in-law out of doing these horrible things because, well, they're really very unhealthy.
Not only that, the doctor's charts are audited. And if he doesn't have a certain mammogram acceptance rate, he gets in trouble.
Oh.
So literally, he has to sell so many flu shots, he has to sell so many mammograms, or he doesn't get paid by the insurance company, he loses his licensure, or worse, because again, the doctors are programmed to respond to little letters on pieces of paper, he gets a rating of not being such a good doctor. And this means something to them, these doctors. That's what they're programmed. They're programmed to respond to these pieces of paper as if they're real. Whereas, again, even when I was in practice, I'm like, well, what are you talking about? You're going to cut my money? You're going to limit my license? What's the penalty? Oh, no penalty? Great. You know, I'm out of here.
Sure.
So that's a difficult person to control, a person that says, what force are you going to exercise right now if I don't comply with whatever you're asking? And the person says, well, I'm not going to exert any force at all, except I'm going to disapprove of you or I'm not going to like you as much. I'm like, well, okay, we can work that out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, when my doctor, the last time that I went in and I refused the mammogram, she says, well, I'm going to write this in your records. And I said, well, okay, go ahead.
She has to write it in her records so they don't blame her. And what she's saying is this record's being read by the government. They're not going to blame me. They're going to blame you. I mean, that's the clarification of that.
Wow. Okay.
And then they're going to, so it's now documented that you don't have a mammogram. And depending on how far things go, someone's going to knock, show up in your door knocking, telling you to get a mammogram. So the correct answer for that doctor would be, okay, let's go ahead and schedule that. And then schedule it and don't show up.
Oh, okay.
So then you haven't refused. She hasn't failed her mission. And everything's everything. See, people aren't familiar with the extent of the system and the extent of the tracking. So you tell the doctor, oh, yes, of course, and then the flu shot. Oh, I'd love to get a flu shot. I can't get it today, though. Can we make it another time? Mm-hmm. And then just don't show up for it.
Okay.
But what she's saying, basically, is the government is watching this, and I'm going to write down this chart. You refuse, and the government's going to get after you. They're not going to get after me. That's the complete conversation that she did not articulate to you.
Oh, okay. Of course, I haven't seen her for a long time, so I probably won't ever go back to her.
You don't have to. It's documented in your chart that you have refused. And so now the government can actually correlate who's refused mammogram. Maybe it's correlate mammogram refusal with political activism or something.
Uh-huh.
And then they can go after these people and give them one last chance to accept a mammogram.
What are they going
to
do?
And those that don't, they get maybe designated as political terrorists or whatever.
Like an anti-mammographer or something. they call the anti-vaxxer.
No, you're a refusenik is what it basically comes down to.
A refusenik, okay. They're not going to show up at my door with a transportable mammogram machine and make me strip at the front door.
They might.
I mean, I cannot believe myself after now that I've become unindoctrinated, I cannot fathom why a young mother would take her child to a doctor and have that doctor inject that little child with all of these viruses.
Totally ignorant, because I vaccinated my kids myself. I did not know. I went through 4 years of indoctrination in medical school. The more indoctrination in medical practice, I was appointed the vaccine officer, received praise and recognition for achieving vaccine rates of over 90%, you know.
But after you know.
Yeah, after you know, it's pretty much you're done. You're done.
Yeah. And I can't believe,
done.
Well, even before I knew about mammograms, I thought, the last one I had, I thought, wow, this hurts. This is stupid. Why would I let somebody mash my breast between two plates of steel? You wouldn't see a guy doing this with some of his private parts.
You might. You look at what these guys have allowed doctors to do to their prostate gland. It's horrific.
Yeah, I was
would
reading.
Would you allow someone to jab you with a needle in your breast without even any anesthetic and do it 14 or 18 times in one sitting?
Now, that the PSA test is dangerous.
Oh, so it's a mammogram. It's designed to create false positives and create more work and more intervention
right. And
more money. That's all it's designed for.
Wow. And if you did have a cyst, it could possibly just explode it. And...
Well, cysts are all harmless by definition. Cysts are harmless.
Okay, I know that there have been people who get ovarian cysts.
Yep. Everybody gets ovarian cysts every month if they're fertile, and that cyst breaks open and releases the egg. So the public is totally misinformed about the nature of ovarian cysts. You're supposed to get them. They show up every month, they break open, they release the egg, and they go away, and that's the cycle. What you're not supposed to get is when the cyst keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and stays there.
What does that indicate if it keeps growing and growing and growing?
It indicates too much bovine growth hormone in your milk.
Wow. When, I hate to be personal, but when I was 17, I got an ovarian cyst that, my mother took me to the doctor. I had surgery. There was 2.5 gallons of fluid in that cyst. I went in, I weighed 141. When I came out, I weighed 113. And, I mean, it was awful. And nobody ever said, well, this is why.
Correct.
And they actually had to remove that ovary. And that was from... the hormones in the milk.
So, question, were you a heavy milk drinker at 17?
I must have been, yeah.
Well, milk, ice cream, cheese.
Yeah. Wow.
And we doctors are trained that everything has no cause, just falls out of the sky. I mean, that's voodoo. What's scientific about that?
Yeah.
If you can't tell me where the disease came from, then you have no scientific basis for treating it. You might have an empirical basis for treating it, but you have no scientific basis for treating it because you're telling me that somebody put a hex on me and that's how come I got this illness.
Right.
So automatically, the doctor leaves the realm of science when he tells you he can't scientifically explain to you why you have an illness.
Well, a lot of people don't even bother to ask. They figure, illnesses happen because you're a human being and you're going
genetic,
to...
Genetic.
Oh, yes, and they're trying... What is this this genetic nonsense they're trying to say with breast cancer?
Because they want you to feel it's inevitable. They want you to feel helpless, and they don't want you to take any action that might reduce your frequency of cancer or recurrence.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
If genetic is short term for you can't do anything about it, trust me, turn yourself over to me, and open your pockets.
Yeah. I've been studying a lot about consensus, and it seems that many of the decisions that are put upon the American public are decided by a small group of people who decide that something is true.
Correct.
And then they market that as scientific, and
correct.
then it becomes a belief.
Correct. Now, only way this really happens is these kids are in government-controlled schools and trained to believe science, trained that science is always right. Without that little piece, this wouldn't work at all. It wouldn't work.
Indeed.
Like I was told in medical school, we're going to tell you stuff, and your observations may show otherwise, but we've done a big sample of the whole big world out there that you haven't even seen yet. And
right.
that is true. And so if your observations invalidate anything that we tell you, your observations are not representative because you're only one person and you're only seeing a limited amount of your limited experiences.
Okay.
This is also the reason why when you prescribe a drug as a doctor and all three patients you give it to drop dead, you should not take that as any kind of indication about the drug's safety because the FDA has approved it and looked at a much larger sample size than you have in your office.
Sure. And it's a little tiny group at the FDA that approves each drug. And sometimes they don't even review it. They just accept the clinical trials from the drug companies and they go ahead and pass it. And so I think a lot of people think, oh, the FDA has checked this out and it's perfectly safe. And that is just not true. In fact, I didn't realize until maybe 10 years ago that the companies that go to the FDA for FDA approval of the product, and I was talking to somebody that worked actually for the FDA, and said, oh, no, the people who want their products approved by the FDA have to pay the FDA to get the product approved. And I thought, oh, so... that is how it works. You pay them, you pay the government to approve something so that you can use it in your marketing plan.
What they do is they've institutionalized bribery. They've legalized it and made it part of the system.
Indeed.
Institutionalized bribery. And we can criticize third world countries like Panama, for example, where maybe there might be an official who will put a stamp on a piece of paper in exchange for a little under-the-table fee. Who knows what it might be. But instead what we now do is we tell the companies, you have to pay this over-the-table fee of umpteen million dollars or whatever, and then once you pay this fee, we have a whole committee here to make sure that you get your drug approved.
No matter, even if it kills people. I mean, that's...
Of course if it kills people. All these drugs kill people. I mean, if you work for the FDA, then you know these drugs kill people. If you don't know, it's because you don't want to know.
Right. There have been a few whistleblowers that have talked about the FDA. But what amazes me is that the drug reps that are out there promoting the drugs... to the doctors. They mm-hmm. call them drug detailers. Isn't that what they call them?
Yeah, drug detailers, drug reps.
And I know one, and I thought, well, up until a couple of years ago, I thought, oh, what a nice person he is. And now I'm thinking, what kind of a monster could you be that you're peddling this poison to the doctors? Do they not know what they're doing? Or are they...
Everybody thinks that the poison, what goes around does not come around. They don't realize that they're going to tell his doctor to use an asthmatic drug, and he's going to prescribe it to their niece, and she's going to drop dead. They don't make that connection. Their attitude is, I prescribe it, I get this doctor to prescribe it, I get a salary, and I get a commission on what he prescribes, and I get to live a good life. And that's as far as their reasoning process goes. They don't understand that they detail a drug to this doctor, the doctor uses it, he prescribes it for their mother, she takes it, and she dies. So because we've gotten human beings to compartmentalize their thinking, these people who are working as drug reps, all they see is their paycheck, that many of them earn more than doctors do, once you factor in their commissions and bonuses. All they see is that they basically get paid to throw parties and socialize and build up doctors' egos and flatter them. It's a great job. Of course, you have to put on a few miles and drive a lot, but it's excellent, excellent paying job. And so that's what they see. And they're admired in their circle and in their families because of their income, maybe because of their house, because of whatever. They're admired. They're looked up to. And so they look to then is the paycheck, they are admired, work conditions, and that's all they see.
Wow. Okay, I have a question in the chat room. What percentage of practicing doctors today would you say actually know they're applying junk science to poison, maim, and murder their patients?
I would say 80% know that they're applying junk science, but they believe it's the best science available, and that makes it okay. There's a whole reasoning system that doctors are subjected to in medical school that if you were a fly on the wall person with no skin in the game, you know, if you're not getting grades for believing this, you're not being told you can repay your loan if you believe this. No incentive to believe or disbelieve anything. You're just listening. You would be shocked, appalled, and horrified. But the doctor is put in this pressure chamber with all these horrific incentives. And so many of these doctors are operating literally in a state of self-hypnosis all day long. They've hypnotized themselves into believing that what they're doing is good and okay. Now, if you ask them, if you press them, why is it good? Why is it okay? Well, it's good because the licensing board, my license is in good standing. I'm doing what I have to do to keep my license in good standing. That's good and responsible. And you press them. Oh, I'm obeying all the health insurance rules. And they'll quote this nonsense that the health insurance has fiduciary responsibilities to wisely spend the money of thousands and thousands or even millions of people who are buying health insurance. And so I can't deplete or destabilize the insurance company by misspending this money in the interest of one individual when there are so many other millions of individuals who have interest weighing on the other side. And they've got all this false logic. So obviously, if you apply that little piece of logic to every single one of those millions of patients, then you have health insurance funds being used in the interests of none of the patients. And so the doctors are not trained to take that logic another two or three steps. And so the whole process of training a doctor is to get him to take his logic maybe one or two steps, but don't go three, four, five, six, seven, or eight steps deep to sort anything out. And because every time a doctor thinks another step deeper, it hurts. Because then it's like, oh, my God, I might be doing something wrong. No, 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 no. It can't be wrong because the licensing board says, okay, yeah. You know, and so you have this whole thing going on. But most doctors are operating in a state of self-hypnosis.
Right. The other thing, too, is that there's this, you mentioned also the justice system, the legal system, that it doesn't matter how amoral something is. If it's legal, then people think, well, it's legal, so then I'm okay.
Right. So if you go to vitalitycapsules.com, click on radio show replays, there's an episode that says, if murder were legal, would you do it? And I walk through how this murder is perfectly legal and all the rewards everybody gets for murdering the patient. It's an incredible, rewarding experience for everyone except the patient. And, you know, if you would murder somebody, if you would murder someone because it's illegal, then how can you blame the doctor, the nurse, the hospital administrator for doing that? And not only that, there's no hope for stopping this if each and every person would themselves commit murder if it were legal, because there's no basis for stopping it. If no one has an independent sense of good and bad, apart from the external financial incentive, then there's no way to change the system. So then the only way to save yourself is to withdraw from the system.
Right.
But if you would commit murder if it were legal, and everyone else feels the way you feel, then there's no chance of any repair here, which is okay. I'm not saying it needs to be repair or not, but that being the case, your only defense is to withdraw from the system completely. That means no health insurance. Don't see the doctor. If you have a problem, either wait it out or deal with it the best you can. And this may sound gruesome to you, but in California, every time they have a doctor strike, the death rate goes down.
Right, I read
quickly,
that.
In days, in hours. That's how deadly healthcare is.
Yeah, I read that. Okay, another question. Is it fair to say that then that these licensed doctors and nurses are actual zombies? Is this fact alone what is really behind the zombie apocalypse? Interesting.
The doctors and nurses, yes, they are zombies. That is true. And whenever they wake up a little bit, they'll take some alcohol or something like that. So that's why a lot of surgeons, for example, are alcoholics. The best surgeons in Syracuse that I knew, the best surgeons were alcoholics. And so they have to maintain a zombie state to continue what they're doing, absolutely.
And what about these people who are in the transplant business? You think, oh, well, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know that they're killing the patient in order to extract the organs.
Here's a numbers game. A numbers game for you. If you kill this one person, you can save the lives of 5 or even 10 who are on the transplant list. That's the short-term logic. But then, again, think a little deeper. If this person is really alive and I'm murdering him, could it be those folks on transplant list don't really need transplants? And if you take a look at the list, you'll find that that's the case.
Wow. And you said about murder, and I'm against abortion, but it has been a fact since 1973 when the Supreme Court okayed it. And there are kids, young women now, who feel like, oh, well, they actually use abortion as they use it as birth control, and they see nothing wrong with it because it is legal, so it's okay. Because it's been legal for so long.
They went to government school, mm-hmm. and so this is what the government schools have taught them. And many of them are the children, like I was a child of a mother who had 6 children and who perceived that she didn't have as many choices, and that had she had fewer children, her life would be different. The truth of the matter is, it would be different, but it wouldn't have been any better, for sure. I think the way to handle this misconception is, first of all, to show people the figures. You look at the figures, it's appalling. You can see that abortion is definitely murder. What figures am I saying you should look at? What you should look at is they have a census in the United States of birth rates by race, African-American, Caucasian, Hispanic, whatever. And you see that African-Americans have 4 pregnancies per 100 women per year. And they have 3 abortions. Well, that brings them down to less than 2, so that's not even replacement. So you can literally wipe out the African-American population after 2 generations of this. Okay. Now you look at the white women. They only have, I think, 2 pregnancies per 100 white women. They're not very fertile. And their abortion rate, again, of I think it's 1 or 1.5, knocks them down to just like 0. And so you look at this and you realize that these abortions are actually wiping out these races. This is like, whoa, you can see it. And the Hispanics, I think they're like 6 or 7 births per 100 women per every year. And their abortion rate is, you know, maybe 2 or something like that. But you look at those demographic figures, you can see the extermination going on. That's on the macro level. But then you've got the micro level. The micro level is, this lady is pregnant. What do we do? And the problem with a pregnant lady now is that her whole family shuns her. And this happened to my niece. She was pregnant with triplets. The whole family shunned her. She could not even get enough food to eat for her pregnancy. Her mother gave her complete 100% health coverage because she was young enough. And the doctors killed the baby with PICC lines and needles and drugs and everything. And she miscarried all of those babies at like 20 weeks, 23 weeks or something like that. So this is the American picture. So how do you solve this problem? We people who are not pregnant, I'm postmenopausal, can't even get pregnant, but what we need to do is when a woman becomes pregnant, we need to give her positive reinforcement. We need to shower her with food, lots of food, and lots of approval. And that's really the difference. Now, in our culture, if you're a woman and you're pregnant, you get negative feedback from everybody, your employer, your spouse, your family. It's awful. We have to send a different message about pregnancy.
Indeed. Oh, my goodness. One of the chatters said that when And that's true. That is truly true. Oh, my goodness. He said that when he worked at a hospital, every surgeon that he knew was an alcoholic.
Correct.
That is scary that these people are...
They have to be to maintain the zombie state. You can't do this sober.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so very, very much for being on the program today. It's been wonderful having you on, as usual, and I think you've covered so many things today. It'll give us all so many things to think about and consider, and we do need to get out of the system, and thank you for encouraging us.
You're welcome.
So, anyway, I hope we can talk soon and talk about another subject.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It starts with you and me.